What up? What up? So, you know, we gonna rap about stuff feeling wild word. And one of the first things I wanna rap about is, you know, we talking about race on this show. And, you know, we're gonna talk about it again. Okay? So, I was watching Inside the NBA, you know, with Charles Barkley and Kennedy Smith and Ernie Smith and Shaq and all of them people. And it's always normally a funny show, you know, they keep it lighthearted. But as usual, you know, we have a lot of stuff going on now, a lot of racial tension. And I guess it was the issue with, someone, what was the dude's name? It was, I should know his name. I'm blanking out. But it was one black player who said something like, you know, hey, you punk ass white boy, to Luka Doncic, who's like a phenom, who's a new phenom in the NBA. Okay, so it was a lot of Latrez Harrell, that's his name. So Latrez Harrell, pretty much, you know, he's a black player that plays on the LA Clippers. You know, he got into the heat of the moment, him and, you know, he was trying to kind of rough up Luka, who's the rising star of the league. He's a white boy, or he's from Slovenia, he's white. And, you know, it was a big thing made about that. And, you know, I think they apologized. You know, Harold came back and said, you know what, that was out of line, I was out of pocket. But, you know, the reason I'm making a podcast on this is because I saw the response, and a lot of people, I'm starting to hear this, like, black people can't be racist thing, and, you know, that's a pet peeve of mine, you know what I'm saying? We dealing with real issues, systemic issues, but this whole idea that racism can only be, I heard Kitty Smith say that, like, oh, he's not racist, he can't be racist because, you know, racism has to do with power, it has to do with your ability to stop someone from getting a job, it has to do with your ability to, segregate people's housing, and, you know, you have to be able to control something in order for you to be racist, and that's not true. You know, that is one form of racism, but that's not the only form of racism, you know what I'm saying? It would be like someone saying that you can't be sexist because you're a female, you know? So I think we, you know, the conversations, I'm liking the fact that people are having more conversations on race, but I do think that a lot of people who have big platforms, people are going to, they sometimes spread misinformation just because of the fact that, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, you know? And some people may say, oh, they just have a different perspective, but it's very dangerous to just say that racism is just connected to power. You know, I've heard a lot of people say that even when I was in college, and it sounds good, and it sounds like, oh, you know, you're saying something like you're woke or something like that. It sounds good, but in actuality, it's not, okay? Because racism, you know, like, racism could be practiced by anybody. You know what I'm saying? Racism is beliefs as well. It's not just connected to power. It is connected to power because you have systemic racism when, in terms of, like they were talking about job discrimination, housing discrimination, discrimination when it comes to your income and wealth and all of that stuff. That is systemic. Yes. So that is racism. But you still can have racist beliefs. You still can say racist comments even if you're someone who is in a oppressed position. So you don't necessarily need to be LeBron James's boss in order for you to say something racist about LeBron. So when they spread that the N-word on his house, on his home in LA, even though those people have no power to hire and fire LeBron, they have no power to take away any endorsements from him. They can't do anything to take any money out of his pocket. You know, but what they did, you know, spray painting the N-word on his home, that's racism, 100%. You know, so we gotta get out of that whole black people can't be racist, because what happens is, the reason why we gotta get out of that is because it stops us from being able to see who's for us and who's against us. And sometimes we are mess up allies. Sometimes we won't be able to see our allies because we're just looking at skin color. Everybody who's black ain't for us, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, I'm showing my bias, but hey, we saw a lot of them at the RNC convention, okay? Just because you can have anybody, you can have a record people who black, that don't mean that they advocate policies that's for black people or with black people in mind, or, you know, so we just gotta be careful with that, that racism only can be connected to power thing, you know, because like you said, you excuse racism from black folk if you believe that, and two, you won't be able to see who is really for you and who is really against you, because you'll be fooled by just by the fact that they look like you. You just assume that they're supposed to be for you, which is not the case. So, you know, let's do better. And yeah, so what do you think about that whole racism is connected to power? You agree, you disagree, why? Get back to me. And this, we're on the next topic, everybody, we on the next topic. Hello, so we're back and we on the second topic. So, you know, I've just been looking at a lot of news and looking at sports and looking at a lot of things, and you know, and I'm a teacher, so we're going back into, we're about to start teaching again, virtual teaching. I just want to give a little bit of my thoughts, okay? It just seems like everything that's been going on has definitely is going to change my mindset going into the next year in terms of teaching. You know, just, you know, first trying to get, it's going to be a challenge just trying to get the technology right in terms of how to teach and making sure we get all of that straight. But also, just the whole concept of neutrality. You know, as a teacher, a lot of times, you know, they try to teach us to be neutral and all of this stuff, not to take a side and all of this stuff. But it's more and more of, I'm looking at society and looking at things, you know, you're going to have to take a side. You know, and the more and more I'm reading history, and we talk a lot about this on Wild Word, but in these times, man, yeah, you're going to have to really choose a side, you know, because it's two diametrically opposed positions when it comes to things like believing in science and believing in climate change and, you know, believing in science in terms of COVID-19 and believing in the reality of systemic racism. You have people who believe in that, who understand that reality, and you have people who don't, who try to minimize it. So for the first time in my, you know, teaching career, you know, I think I really do see what's at stake, you know. And this year, when especially when I teach history, I don't really, you know, of course I'm going to try to be fair and fair to the facts and stuff, but I'm not really as interested as I used to be in trying to be neutral, you know. I'm not trying to indoctrinate anybody or anything like that, but at the same time, I am going to call a spade, you know, and I am being very intentional about centering black and Latino voices, into the story of history, you know, in the history that I teach them, you know. A lot of times in the curriculum, it's a lot of, you know, white people history, you know, and like I said, I'm not going to exclude white people because I don't want to do the same thing they did to us, but at the same time, I teach mostly black and Hispanic kids. Most of them, you know, are from working class families, so I'm gonna have to, you know, for the first time in my life, I have like a new purpose and a new zeal in terms of why I need to teach and teach the way I want to, you know. But yeah, because more and more, yeah, the test scores, all of that stuff is not really what I measure great teaching as, you know. I'm looking at how relevant is the teaching to the lives of the students that you're teaching, you know. So it's gonna be a challenge to try to, you know, not overload them with information, but at the same time, I want them to understand that history is the here and the now. And I'm starting to see that more and more as I'm starting to look at politicians and how they speak about history. And quite frankly, a lot of these conservatives, man, and Republicans, I don't know what type of history they really learned in school or they learned as an adult. You know, when people say stuff like, oh, this is not when some racist or something tragic happens in terms of terrorism or racial violence or anything or another cop shooting of an unarmed black man, some commentators will get up there and say, oh, this is not who we are. This is not who we are as America. And I'm looking like, as someone who studied history, is certified to teach history in Maryland, this is exactly who we are. You know, and it seems like it's two camps. It's one camp that don't really understand that, or don't understand or just wants to ignore the fact that America was born in violence. You know what I'm saying? And racial violence and all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like a cake. You know, racism is unfortunately the salt that we have baked into our cake. Baked into the cake of America. You know, so that's why every time, it doesn't matter how much whipped cream you try to put on top of a cake, if you actually baked it in, you baked it in salt, it's going to taste salty. You know, and that's just where we at with it. You know, when we see another a black man shot with Jacob Blake, you know, they saying that he's paralyzed and stuff like that. So, you know, that's very tragic and sad. But it's just like when you really start to study history, this is nothing new, really, unfortunately. You know, and the issue is that we have too many people, too many leaders, quote unquote, too many people making policies that don't understand the pain and the suffering of black and brown people. You know, so they say, oh, this is not who we are. This is not who we are. But if you really read and dig into history, you really understand that this is who we are. And but what we want to do, though, is we want to change the ingredients. We have used the ingredients of hate for so long, you know, in this country. Those were the ingredients. The ingredients of hate, discrimination, racism, sexism. We used those ingredients to bake the cake in America. So that's why it's so deeply embedded in America. You know, but some people, when you say that, they feel like, oh, you hate America. No, we just got to call a spade. And now, once we understand that, we say, oh, okay, we don't want to use those same ingredients to bake the new cake, you know, and bake, you know, we want to use different ingredients so that our cake is sweet and it's not salty. You know what I'm saying? But if we keep using the same ingredients, we keep putting salt in the batter. You know, we keep putting salt in the batter, and then we keep wondering why the cake is salty, right? We keep wondering why racism is still here, because you're still baking, you're still using those same ingredients to cook, right? You're still using those same ingredients. So that's my little metaphorical breakdown. But yeah, but you know, so until people really get a true grasp of history, we're going to keep, it's going to be a crazy cycle, you know, and, you know, so that's why I really want to inspire my students this year to really like get involved and to pay attention to, you know, the process of politics, because a lot of times that it seems like it's so boring and all of this stuff, but, you know, it's a lot on the line. It's a lot on the line, you know. So everybody can't be the basketball, football player all the time. You know, I want to inspire. Hopefully, I inspire some of my students to become lawyers and to be people who actually fight for civil rights. You know, so that's kind of my new purpose as a teacher now. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, you know. So, but yeah, so this virtual teaching is going to be something new. But I am looking forward to it, because I feel like in these times I have like a new purpose in which I have to teach, you know. So what do you think about neutrality? What do you think about teaching virtual? You know, you being a learner or a teacher, what do you think? So get back to me on Wild Word. Should the NBA players come back in the bubble? I think they should do what they want to do. I still give them credit for protesting regardless. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't understand, Jacob Blake, you know, he was a black man who was recently paralyzed because he was shot 7 times by the police in Wisconsin. And there's been a lot of outrage over that. And the NBA players pretty much, you know, they said, hey, we ain't playing. You know, first the Milwaukee Bucks, they were supposed to go out there and play the Orlando Magic. And out of nowhere, it was impromptu. It wasn't planned. The Bucks just said, hey, we're not going to play. We're not playing. And I think, which a lot of commentators have been excellent in pointing out, it's not just about Jacob Blake. It's just about the total disregard for black life. It's just another example of a total disregard for black life, and that police are not being held accountable for that. You know, they're not going to jail, nothing. They haven't been charged, anything, you know, in that case so far. So we still don't have justice for Breonna Taylor that was killed in Kentucky. We still don't have justice for Rayshon Brooks, Elijah McClain. So it's been a couple of, you know, Ahmaud Arbery. So a couple of people that we have spoke about on this show who, you know, who have been killed and officers have not been arrested or charged or anything, you know. So it's been a lot of tempers flaring, a lot of emotions flaring in the bubble. So now a lot of, you know, you have LeBron with the Lakers and in the Clippers, they pretty much saying, hey, we don't think we want to come back. We don't want to continue the rest of the season. Just boycott it, you know, until they see some actionable change that's happening. They don't want to come back. So, and I totally get that, you know. First Take, you know, they've been talking a lot about this, and some people don't like the fact that they are going to protest because they're like, hey, we're still going to have systemic racism. So even if you protest, that's not going to solve it. And that's true. But the issue is not to solve systemic racism. Don't shift the blame on the players. They're not the ones who started systemic racism. That was already here before they, you know, they were born into a world that had systemic racism. But what we want to do is that we don't want people just entertaining themselves and engaging in escapism, you know, regarding this police brutality issue. You know, so I understand they use their platform to talk about it after the game, but I really think that this is not playing. I think this is just black rage. This is rage because based on the fact that they understand more and more how undervalued their lives are. You know, if they wasn't playing basketball, they could be one of, they can be Rashard Brooks. They could be Elijah McClain. They can be Jacob Blake. They could be any number, or Breonna Taylor. They could be any of those victims if they just wasn't playing basketball. You even had people, Sterling Brown, who played for the Milwaukee Bucks, who had a run-in with the police, who was, you know, so. Yeah, I think just this total disregard for black life. I think to Nick Wright's point, he made a good point because a lot of these players are on social media. So they can see a lot of these people online justifying these police shootings. You have a lot of conservative Republicans, because I'm going to call it out. We got to call a spade a spade. A lot of those conservative Republicans and Republicans out here lying and pretty much disregarding the real pain of police brutality and the real reality of police brutality. They are out here they're out here defending a lot of these police shootings. You know, they're defending, they're over here trying to explain why Jacob Blake got killed, got paralyzed. They're trying to explain, pretty much always trying to defend the cops, to defend a lot of these inexcusable actions by the police. So every time it's a black man or woman killed, they always blame the black person. They try to look into their past and say, oh, they had a criminal record, when that had nothing to do with why they were arrested or why they were killed, you know, at that moment, you know. So people was trying to bring up George Floyd's, not people, conservatives and a lot of racists, they were trying to bring up George Floyd's past and try to make that a reason why he should have been killed, you know. So I think it's a general frustration with that too, because you have a lot of people who watch the NBA, but they don't really give two cares about black people. They just care about them in terms of entertainment, you know. And I think a lot of players are coming to grips with that reality, and that is infuriating. It's definitely infuriating. So my position on it is, I think I'm rocking with the players. If they want to all come back, let them come back. If they don't, I'm good with that too. You know, I just like the fact that we are talking about this, and that I hope, hopefully, they are able to make people uncomfortable, and they are able to lead, their actions are able to lead to some real change. You know, but I'm not putting all of the blame on them to solve police brutality or to solve systemic racism, because they are not the ones who are responsible for ending that. I just like the fact that they're using their platform to get to using their platform to bring more awareness to the issue, and that they're putting pressure on the people who actually can make a change. So we need to end qualified immunity. Police do not need to be shielded and from consequences when they kill unarmed black men and women, period. You know, and I don't understand why Republicans don't understand that. They won't take up a bill in the Senate. The George Floyd or the Policing Injustice Policing Act, something to that effect. And it pretty much had ban on no knock warrants, and it had a ban. It took away qualified immunity. But a lot of these police unions are the ones fighting it against this legislation, because they still want to protect bad cops. They still want to protect cops that kill unarmed black people. And then you see videos of white people. It was a video of a white man who was naked and he had just killed two people. It was happening in 2009. I missed it. So like I said, I'm a little late on that, but it was a white guy in Virginia. He had just killed two people. He was naked and the police had the gun and he didn't even shoot him. And they were somehow able to arrest him. They was able to arrest the quote-unquote hero that a lot of conservatives and racists are calling a hero. This 17-year-old who had a gun in Wisconsin. And he shot two Black Lives Matter protesters. And he somehow was able to go home, go to Illinois. And then they arrested him. So he was able to be arrested without being paralyzed. And he actually shot two people with a gun. So this is the type of stuff that's going on, man. This is the reality that was going on, that's been going on for a long time. So this is the anger and the frustration that a lot of black NBA players are feeling, because they come from them neighborhoods, you know, and people are probably hitting them on Twitter, and then they're seeing the ops. They're seeing the opposition, too, trying to justify it, or trying to justify, you know, a lot of these shootings and stuff. So, you know, I'm with the players, you know, but what do y'all think? So, should they come back? Should they finish the playoffs? Should they not? What do you think? Get back to me on Wild Words.